Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today has been a longtime faith-based grassroots organizer for social justice. The Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II is the pastor of the Greenleaf Christian Church in Goldsboro, North Carolina, and the state president of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP. Over the years, he's played a role in union disputes, fighting for the rights of death row inmates and the rights of minorities and the poor. And he came to national prominence as a leader of Moral Mondays, which met for 13 straight weeks at the North Carolina State Capitol during the 2013 legislative session, peacefully protesting that the legislature's actions to restrict voting rights, cut education funding and unemployment benefits, and add restrictions on the access to abortion was deconstructive, as he puts it. The demonstrations drew tens of thousands of protesters and resulted in over 1,000 peaceful resistance arrests. He's the author of a new book, which is part memoir, part civil rights history, and part organizer handbook titled The Third Reconstruction, Moral Mondays, Fusion Politics, and the Rise of a New Justice Movement, which details his views on his work on social justice, not as a left versus right or conservative versus liberal issue, but through a pointed moral and evangelical religious viewpoint. He's speaking today at the Phillips Theological Seminary's Remind and Renew Conference, but registration is closed for that event. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Reverend Barber, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
I'm glad to be with you here in Tulsa.
Yes, you'll be speaking at the Phillips Theological Seminary's Remind and Renew Conference today, but I want to talk about what you've been writing about and what you've been experiencing in North Carolina with your Moral Mondays movement. And your new book, The Third Reconstruction, talks about bringing on a third reconstruction, I assume in the South, but really across the whole country. What do you mean by a third reconstruction?
The third reconstruction grows out of an understanding of the first two reconstructions, 1868, the first reconstruction right after slavery. Black and whites came together in the South and formed what was called fusion politics. And within that framework, they supported education reform, criminal justice reform, voting rights. They even were talking about wages back then. In fact, in our Southern Constitution, they wrote that every person had an inalienable right to life, liberty, the enjoyment of the fruit of their own labor, because they knew that labor without the fruit of labor was just a pseudo form of slavery. They rewrote the Constitution, they passed civil rights laws, and fundamentally didn't just change the South, but changed the country. Then, of course, there was a vicious, violent backlash of vicious persons who wanted to so-called take back the country. And they began to howl against public education. They began to howl against taxes and wanted to cut taxes. They implemented Jim Crow. They implemented things to so-called put people back in their place because they were afraid of how this fusion politics rooted in deep moral language would fundamentally transform the country. And it ended. The Tulsa riots here was one of the signs of the ending of the first Reconstruction. Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal, was one ending of the another ending of the Reconstruction. Then in the 1954, you get the Brown versus Board of Education decision, and that spawns the second Reconstruction. We often call it the Civil Rights Movement. You get that. You get Rosa Parks sitting down in Montgomery after the death of Emmett Till. You get Dr. King standing up. You see the Civil Rights Act of 64, Voting Rights Act of 65. Earlier, the March on Washington. We see Medicaid, Medicare, economic opportunities, minimum wage increases. We begin to see a very progressive movement. But how does it happen? Blacks, whites, Latinos, labor, Catholics, Jews, Christians come together to reconstruct the nation. And yes, it's rooted in the South, but it impacts the whole nation. And then you have a vicious backlash again. Martin, Mega, Malcolm, Viola Wusa, Jim Reeve are all killed. You have the white Southern strategy implemented by Richard Nixon through his architect, Kevin Phillips. And they basically say, we're going to talk about race, but we're not going to use so-called race language like the N-word. So they start talking about things like entitlements in negative terms and cutting taxes and forced busing and states' rights. And as a way to turn back the second Reconstruction, and by the 1970s, 80s, is basically ended. I believe, and we believe, as we wrote this book, that America is in the embryonic stages of a third Reconstruction. Whether you see these movements with Fight for 15, Moral Monday, beginning to stand up and saying that we need to come together and we need to challenge this cynical agenda that says if you want a great America, the way to get there is to cut public education, attack teachers, cut health care, deny health care, hurt the immigrant community, attack the poor, pit people against one another based on their sexuality or their religion, deny voting rights, and then after that, you create all that division, make sure people can get guns quicker than they can register to vote. We think those are signs of fear and division because we do see birthing a third Reconstruction, and some people are trying to abort it because it is an idea whose time has come. We need a Reconstruction movement that's rooted in our deepest moral values, where we're not talking about left and right, and Democrat versus Republican and conservative versus liberal, but we're talking about what's constitutionally consistent, morally defensible, and economically sane in order to move this country further even more.
Now, a lot of this reactionary movement you describe is probably as ascendant as it's ever been in the last generation, at least. Your state, for example, North Carolina, was a even though after it came through the second Reconstruction, as you call it, the Civil Rights era, it's been had a fairly moderate politics for the South. But over the last 6 years there, you've seen a really aggressive reactionary politics in North Carolina. And many states across the country, you're seeing this huge reaction from whether it be President Obama's leadership or just a reaction to reducing the size of federal government and reducing things like education funding or entitlements, if you will.
Tim Wise in his books talks about how entitlement programs, the very programs that helped many white persons in the 50s and 40s, once black and brown people began to have access, have been, quote-unquote, what he called racialized. But one of the things people should know as a backstory of North Carolina, when we started the Forward Together moral movement, it was in 2006. We began with 16 organizations, have over 200 now united with 150 branches of the NAACP and over 1,000 clergy. We won significant victories. One of those victories was same-day registration and extension on early voting, which in fact, in 2008, President Obama lost North Carolina on Election Day, but he won during the early voting period. Uh-huh. And then after that, Rich, we began to see, we had a senator that supported Obamacare. North Carolina was the first state in the South to raise the minimum wage. We began to see an increase in education. What happened was the backlash in 2010. And once the backlash happened in 2010 and the election of what we call regressive extremists, Tea Party-led extremists, then they began to turn back public policy and as a reaction to our victories. Then, and one of the first things they went after was voting rights, because when President Obama was elected, they saw the handwriting on the wall. Never before in the South had North Carolina voted the way it did, for instance, for President Obama. They saw him win significantly in southern states like Florida and Virginia and North Carolina, which meant that the old so-called white southern strategy was breaking apart. And when it fell apart, they recognized that this means that's a new day. So what we believe is all of this regressive extremism is an attempt to abort this third Reconstruction. The demographics have changed. You know, you got 25% of the electorate in North Carolina is now African-American, 3% Latino. If you add that to progressive whites, you can fundamentally change the South. So what did they do? They went after voting rights. They tried to split people based on the LGBT question. We have the worst voter suppression law in the country. These are attempts to abort the third Reconstruction because our adversaries know what Reconstruction can do. The last two Reconstructions, they had to stop it after the impact. Now what they're trying to do is stop a future that is coming. It's going to happen. The issue is whether or not they can hold it back.
Now, you mentioned your Moral Monday movement, and this has been something that has been a part of North Carolina politics since that Republican majority came into the North Carolina legislature, which had veto-proof majorities. You've organized regular demonstrations at the Capitol on Mondays for at least several years. Explain what the Moral Monday movement is. You mentioned it started prior to the Republican majority, but it really took off once they began cutting education funding, passing restrictions on abortion, cutting unemployment benefits, refusing to expand Medicaid once the Affordable Care Act came into being.
Yeah, well, actually, what we like to say is For 8 years, we had been pushing forward. We had significant victories. Then we had this reaction in 2010. There was a lot of the reaction to President Obama's election and our progressive move. First thing they tried to do was deny the pass voter ID. Beverly Perdue was the governor then. We pushed her, and she blocked it. But what we could not block was redistricting. And what they did was they passed the worst redistricting plan we've seen since the 19th century. And they basically created apartheid districts that put 51% of African Americans into 27 out of 120 House seats and 49% of African Americans into 19 out of 50 Senate seats, thereby creating these apartheid voting districts. What that did was it fixed it in North Carolina. So even though 150,000 more people voted for progressives, we ended up electing the most regressive legislature and congressional representation and a governor in the history of the state. In the first 50 days in 2012, basically, they went after everything that we had won. Education, as you said, they denied 500,000 people Medicaid expansion. They went after 180,000 people unemployment. They cut earned income tax credit that Ronald Reagan had actually supported so that they could give 14 families a tax cut. They went after the LGBT community. They went after the immigrant community. And then during Maundy Thursday of 2013, they decided to put forth the worst voter suppression bill legislation ever. We decided at that point that if they were going to be this extreme and this cynical to come together to go backwards, we had to be faithful and hopeful enough to come together and go forward. And so the first Moral Monday, which is a part of that longer Forward Together Moral movement, started on the last Monday in April. 17 of us went in, 7 clergy, 10 citizens, one lady with cerebral palsy, her name is Berlin. She was in a wheelchair. We went in to protest. We didn't plan to do all of these Mondays. We went in to raise our moral voice in our state capitol. And they arrested us. And they arrested this lady in a wheelchair. And they overreached. The next Monday, people came. The next Monday, people came. The movement took off. We had to finally name it. And by the end of the summer, 1,000 people, more than any other time in the history of any state at a state capitol, had been arrested. And then the next February, when we have our People's Assembly, we have it every second Saturday of February. We've been having it for 10 years. 100,000 people showed up. We also began to organize black and whites out in the western part of the state, where the Tea Party thought they had a stronghold. But when whites began to understand in the mountains how these cuts were hurting people in the mountains, for instance, unemployment, Medicaid expansion, and they saw that 346,000 people were white that were being cut out of Medicaid, 30,000 veterans. People began to shift because we never talked about Democrat versus Republican. We talked about what is moral, what is constitutional, and what is economic. When we started, lastly, about 40% of North Carolinians wanted Medicaid expansion. But the more we raised the consciousness of the state through these moral acts, now 58% want Medicaid expansion. And the numbers have flipped. The legislature is down to something like 19% in the polls. The governor is somewhere around 35% in the polls. Because once people began to look at what was going on through a deeply moral and constitutional lens, they began to see how extremism, regressive extremism, hurts all of us and not just some of us.
My guest today is the Reverend Dr. William Barber II, a pastor of Greenleaf Christian Church in Goldsboro, North Carolina, and he's president of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP. He's been a leader in the Moral Monday movement and the Third Reconstruction, as he calls it, in North Carolina. His book is titled The Third Reconstruction, Moral Monday, Fusion Politics and the Rise of a New Justice Movement. And he will be a guest at today's Phillips Theological Seminary's Remind and Renew Conference, which unfortunately has already reached capacity and is closed to the public at this point. But he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. As a sitting pastor, of course, you know there are prohibitions against state and religion, and you're mixing the two in this moral movement. But I think one of the things you said is that this is not a Democrat versus Republican. This is about a moral stand. And also, I should mention, you talk about early in your career how black pastors were very reluctant to get into the political process. How do you square that with, you know, the constitutional prohibitions and what you're doing with this movement?
Well, first of all, let's look at the history of the country. It was, and I'm a pastor in a congregation that's predominantly black but has white members as well. I'm in a denomination, Disciples of Christ, is predominantly white. So I like to talk about prophetic Christianity. I'm a theological conservative. I'm an evangelical. I'm a theological biblicist. Now, people might say, what is he talking about? And that's my point. We have allowed people to hijack these terms. For instance, to be a theological conservative means to hold on to the essence of. Well, what did Jesus talk about the most in his first sermon? He talked about good news to the poor, release to the captive, recovery of sight to the blind, healing of the broken heart, and declaring the acceptable year of the Lord, which comes out of the theme of Jubilee, which was all about releasing captives and creating justice. Jesus said that you've left undone the more weightier matters of the law. All of the prophets whom Jesus pulled from let us know that ultimately religion is not about ceremony and not about titles, but how you stand in relationship to the marginalized, the poor, the left out, the hurting. Isaiah 58, for instance, says, loose the bands of wickedness, which literally means pay people what they deserve. And only when that happens can you be a repairer of the breach. And so I don't believe that an evangelical is synonymous, for instance, with the Republican Party. In fact, if anything, evangelical is not synonymous with any party. An evangelical is one who preaches the good news, and the good news is not just about soul salvation, but it is about social transformation. It is about what Jesus said, when I was hungry, did you feed me? When I was naked, did you clothe me? When I was sick, did you heal me? And he did not address that to individual charity. He said he would critique the nations, the governments, based on that. So that's number one. Number two, all of our greatest movements in this country, abolition movement, was black and white clergy coming together from a deep moral perspective. That's how we ended slavery. The Reconstruction movement in the South was led by black and white clergy coming together. The Civil Rights movement, black and white and Jews and Gentiles and Christians coming together. Dr. King, as a Baptist, Southern Baptist preacher, challenging the system and challenging the church, if you will, to stand up for what's right and declaring that laws that hurt people might be legal in America, but they were illegal when it comes to the laws and the great moral arc of the universe. And so what we have found in this movement is whether people come in because they're constitutional moralists, they believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they believe in the establishment of justice and the common good, or whether they come in because they are people of faith, different faiths, who understand that in all of the major religions, justice and how we treat the least of these and the poor, both in policy and in personal charity, is paramount. You know, there are more than 2,000 scriptures in the Holy Bible, the Old and New Testament, that relate to the poor and women and children. So persons who claim to be biblicists and claim to be evangelicals, but they never say a word about justice, they never say a word about structural poverty and racial structural racism, and they simply believe that God is on the side of cutting taxes and cutting wealth and on the side of guns, you know, at best they are misinformed, and at worst they are intentionally heretical when it comes to the faith of Jesus Christ and the faith of the God of the Bible, because he said the weightier matters of the law are love, justice, and mercy. So for me, as a pastor, it is pastorally irresponsible for me to pray, for instance, that people in my congregation be healed, but then not stand up against a policy in North Carolina, for instance, denial of Medicaid, that is literally killing 3,000 people a year. Because for every 500,000 people that are denied Medicaid expansion, 3,000 people die. That's pastorally irresponsible. It's irresponsible for me to know how people marched out of the church on the Edmund Pettus Bridge and were beat down on a Sunday because of their faith. And then today, when we have less voting rights today because of the way the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, that we somehow sit back and say, well, that's not really a moral issue. In fact, the matter is, whether it's Social Security or Medicaid expansion or the voting rights or civil rights or Brown versus Board of Education, all of them had deep moral underpinnings. And lastly, it is this moral language, this Reconstruction language, that gives us the way to talk about issues that are broader than the puny language of Democrat versus Republican and liberal versus conservative. I don't even like liberal versus conservative. It comes out of the 17th century with the French Revolution. We're not in the French Revolution. We're in 21st century America.
The puny, I like that, the puny politics.
It's too puny. I mean, somebody asked this question the other day. They said, you know, what kind of Christian doesn't want people to have health care? You know, when Jesus, mainly what he did was heal people. You know, what kind of Christian or what kind of person of faith wants to take from the working poor and the poor and give to the wealthy? I mean, it doesn't even make sense. So the issue is not just, is it left or is it right? That's too small. Is it conservative or is it liberal? That's too small. The issue is, and this is what our movement raised, is it morally defensible? And is it constitutionally consistent? And is it economically sane? And when you couple that kind of conversation with something like the book, The Price of Inequality by Joseph Stiglitz, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate, where he lays out that we pay a heavy price when we engage and when we steer our economics in a way that only benefits the wealthy and actually hurts the poor. We hurt everybody. We hurt everybody. Or when the Mailman School of Public Policy at Columbia says that you can actually calculate today that 250,000 people are dying a year because of poverty and low levels of education. And we're the wealthiest nation in the world, but have more poor people today than we've ever had in the history of the world. We can do better than that, but we have to have a moral call, what Dr. King called a revolution of moral values.
My guest today is Reverend Dr. William Barber II. He's a president of North Carolina chapter of the NAACP and pastor of Greenleaf Christian Church in Goldsboro, North Carolina, author of The Third Reconstruction, Moral Mondays, Fusion Politics, and the Rise of a New Justice Movement. Several times you referred to that idea of a fusion of coalitions of black and white, white churches, black churches, Jews, Gentiles, everybody coming together. Can you talk about the importance of fusion politics? In your book, you describe an early union battle in one of the first towns you were a preacher in, where it was you didn't get that fusion together and were ultimately unsuccessful. What did that teach you?
Yeah, that was up in Martinsville, Virginia, when I first went there, and you sent union busters in to bust a company called Toltecs that was trying to where the people trying to unionize, and they split. They put black preachers in one room, white preachers in another, and people did not understand that we all needed to be in the same room. One of the things we try to teach people, and this is something we've learned in the moral movement, the same people that are against the LGBT community, if you look at their votes, are against, for instance, public education. The same people that vote against public education vote against health care reform. Same people that vote against health care reform vote against raising a living wage. Same people against living wage tend to vote against environmental justice. So when you begin to see the intersectionality of regressive extremism, the question is, if they are cynical enough to be together, why aren't we smart enough to come together? And then you look at the history of the Reconstruction movement, the first two, and you see that when people have come together, we've been able to make fundamental change. Dr. King actually gave us an outline in 63. He said, go back to Mississippi, go back there. He never told us to go back to D.C. and march on Washington unless we were going back with poor people from every different race and creed and geography of this country and stay there. He told us to build state-based movements where we bring people together around these common issues and we show the intersectionality. And that's what a moral movement has to do. What we've seen, for instance, in North Carolina by raising this movement together, you know, I'm African-American, but the movement is not a black movement. 60% of people got arrested were white. 13% were Republican. You know, we're organizing now. We have seven new branches of the NAACP in Western North Carolina. All of them are majority white. One place we're organizing is 99% white, 89% Republican. And when we took the moral movement there and had conversation with them by invitation, of course, I didn't want to go at first because it's in a place called Mitchell County where they ran all the black people out in 1920 because of a false allegation about rape. But I went with other people, and we had a conversation with a couple of hundred people, Republicans. In fact, the former chair of the Republican Party was in the room. And by the end of the time together, he let me know that he had resigned because he said, I'm not a Tea Party extremist. I'm an Eisenhower, Lincoln, a Teddy Roosevelt Republican. And now they have joined, and in the western part of the state, it's the only place in the country we know where incumbent Tea Party is lost. Mm-hmm. And that's where Moral Monday people came together. They didn't endorse a candidate. They endorsed a new idea and a new way of thinking together. And they brought Republicans, Democrats, blacks, and whites together. So we have to, you know, we've been so miseducated, and we have to take it back. You know, I often tell folks when they say, I see some people who claim to be Republicans standing against voting rights. I say, you're not Republican. You're an extremist because your founder, Lincoln, would have been for voting rights. When I see people standing against Medicaid expansion saying, you know, everybody, no, you're not, because health care was first an issue of Teddy Roosevelt, 1912. In fact, Teddy Roosevelt, as a Republican, said, there are five moral issues that had to be made a part of the American political system. He said taking care of the environment, living wage and minimum wage, union rights, getting money out of politics, and health care for all. That's Teddy Roosevelt. Eisenhower said that if you don't fund public education, you are in fact infringing on national security. So what we have to do is have a kind of re-education out of all of this miseducation. And what we found is when we bring people together, and that's what the Forward Together Moral Movement, when we would gather on Mondays in front of the legislature, I remember when they called us Moron Monday, Money Monday. They said we were just a bunch of liberals. In fact, I don't mind being called a liberal per se because liberty, I think, is the root word of liberal. But anyway, what scared people began to hit them was when they would see the people going to jail together. For instance, you would see a doctor going to jail with somebody in a wheelchair on a breathing machine who's the doctor's came saying, because my patients are being killed by these policies, the person in the wheelchair would say, I'm wealthy. I can afford this health care, but I'm going to jail today for somebody who can't. Mm. That's a different kind of movement. And I believe that we need that kind of revival together, and we need to have these moral movements, what I call state-based, indigenously led, deeply moral, deeply constitutional, anti-racist, anti-poverty, pro-justice, transformative fusion movements in every state in the country, and especially in the South, in order to spread it around the rest of the country. We need it right here in Oklahoma, where we bring together indigenously led people around these deeply moral issues. We no longer talk about them being liberal Democrat, but deeply moral issues. How we treat our care of our children is a deeply moral issue. How we care for the sick, deeply moral, public education, and we began to raise these fusion coalitions where people understand our intersectionality. I think Dr. King said it like this, we are inextricably bound together.
The name of the book is The Third Reconstruction. Reverend Barber, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, and our word that we say to everybody, Rich, and you may use it on your show, is forward together, not one step back.
The Reverend Dr. William Barber II, pastor of the Greenleaf Christian Church and president of the North Carolina chapter of the NAACP, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His new book is titled The Third Reconstruction, Moral Mondays, Fusion Politics, and the Rise of a New Justice Movement. It's published by Beacon Press. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.